Welcome to episode 11 of the Your Kids Next Read podcast, in which we talk about books and reading for kids of all ages. And thank you so much for the 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. They really make our day. I'm Alison Tate, author of middle grade adventure series, The Mapmaker Chronicles, The Adaban Cipher, and my latest, The Maven and Reed Mystery Series. And I'm here with my co-host, the extraordinary Megan Daly, celebrity teacher librarian, blogger at Children's Books Daily, and author of Raising Readers, How to Nurture a Child's Love of Books. Megan and I, along with our good friend, author Alison Rushby, are founders of the Your Kids Next Read community on Facebook. Search for Your Kids Next Read there to join us. So, let's discuss the Megan news this week. What's happening, Megan Daly?
Well, my eldest niece has just turned 16 this week, and she has always been the self-declared non-reader of our extended family. We have lots of nieces and nephews in my extended family, and I am obviously the book auntie. My sister is the money auntie. She gives money for birthdays and Christmas, etc. So she is clearly the fave, and I always give books, obviously, because seriously, what else would I be giving as a librarian? And my 16-year-old niece has, oh my gosh, she's just hilarious. I completely and utterly adore her. Hello, Jazz. She'll be excited I've given her a shout out. But she has always been like, yeah, oh, you're never going to crack me, Megan. Of course, we have managed to crack her on a few books, and she does love graphic novels and audiobooks. But she sent the list of birthday wishes to the extended family, and it was extensive, and it did not have books on it, obviously. So I got her the asked for Mecca voucher, which, you know, I'm also a big fan of getting a Mecca voucher in case anybody would like to purchase me one. But I also got her a magazine subscription because, you know, partway between a book and, you know, a bit of fun. And I got her a graphic novel. So I'm covering all bases, I feel, which is what I like to do. But I've put the Mecca voucher inside the book. So she's going to, yeah, hopefully she'll open up the book and like pretend to be happy, and then she'll, yeah, hopefully be fine with that.
So I am the forgetful auntie. I am I'm hopeless. Honestly, we're all hopeless. In my family, generally speaking, hopeless with birthdays. It's just an expectation that at some point, sometime around someone's birthday, we'll remember to ring or something. But I tend to prefer, because I like to see them, and I don't live, like, obviously near my nieces and nephews. They're all in Sydney, and I'm down the coast. I like to see them. So when I see them, I like to give them a random something then. That's kind of how the birthdays work.
So do you do, like, are you the experiences auntie? Because that's another thing we discussed.
No, not so much. It's just more sort of like, or I'm a random gift auntie. Like, if I see something, I'll just send it to them via, you know, courier or whatever. I'm hopeless at keeping track of dates and, you know, names.
I can't actually imagine you being hopeless at anything, but I'll take your word for it.
I think it's, look, honestly, I think it's actually a really bad reflection on me, because it's possibly a priority thing, because I think that I'm so focused on a billion other things that I forget. There's a couple of birthdays I remember, like they're carved in stone, mostly because they relate to other things. So, and this brings my parents great joy, as I'm sure you can imagine. I remember their wedding anniversary every year.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, no, but I remember it because it's my dog's birthday.
Oh, Al. They know that?
Yeah, they do. They do. I go around there. Because I've only remembered it for the last 7 years, and I go around with a present for them every year, and they go, oh, is it Scout's birthday?
Oh, mate, that's I don't even know what to say about that. That's hilarious.
It's kind of funny, I know. I'm terrible. And the other thing I would like to say is that if you have a niece or nephew turning 16, buy them a book by all means, but also buy them a driving lesson.
Oh my gosh.
Buy them a driving lesson. Because as someone as someone who's just done the 120 hours of driving instruction with Book Boy, buy them a driving lesson.
My brother always, he's probably more of your ilk. He forgets until like the week after, despite my many repeated text messages
there
reminding
him
of things. But I'm going to get him to do the driving lesson thing. That's great. I love that. Thank you.
Yeah, anytime. It's I think, the best gift that you could give them and the best gift that you could give their parents.
Oh, brilliant.
Now, I'm not driving or giving gifts this week, although possibly I should. I'm going to check my diary now to make sure that's no one's birthday. I'm moving house. I am moving house and I am in a world of pain. But in good news, it means that I'm no longer decluttering and cleaning my house for kind of, for open house inspections. So that's a good thing, because that was awful. I don't know if anyone's done that out there, but trying to live in your house while it looks like you don't live in your house when you have teenage boys in your life and a border collie with a lot of fluff.
Oof.
Is not anybody's idea of a good time. That's all I want to say about that. And I think it's a bit like childbirth. We're just going to like put it somewhere into some back recess of our mind,
right,
and never remember it again. Oh, it's awful. I mean, it's not painful like, you know, childbirth, but it is not an experience that anybody needs to relive, trust me.
But have you enjoyed, like, as a librarian who has really well-honed culling skills, I mean, I can only imagine my joy at throwing things out. Has that been somewhat of a highlight, or no, you're past that point?
No, there has been some joy in that, but like it's just all that stuff of like, I've got bookshelves full of books that I don't, you know, that I've culled, and then it's that whole thing of like, well, now I've got to find good homes for them and you know, all of that sort of thing. So I don't mind all that. I do really enjoy going through the boys' cupboards, like going through those wardrobes and just getting rid of all the things that they don't wear, all the things that they've grown out of. I've got some younger friends who just delight in me going through having a spring clean moment, because they end up with bags of clothes. Yeah, like it's great.
It is the best thing ever. I love a hand-me-down, and I've got some friends who do the best hand-me-downs for my children. It is like Christmas.
Yeah, we have one young friend who really loves getting Book Boy Junior's offcuts, what do you call them?
Off
things.
I don't know.
Off things, whatever. Throwing things out, hand-me-downs.
I don't know.
Because he has just a full array of sportswear. So, you know, and not only does he have his own sportswear, but he's got sportswear handed down from other bigger boys.
It's quality. Oh, quality.
Quality sportswear. Anyway, let's not talk about that anymore, because we have to talk about books. Now, we're going to start with book mail, and I'm going to start because I don't have any book mail. Can you believe it? None. What's going on out there?
When you said that before, I was like, how can you not have any book mail?
No one sent me books this week. It's devastating. I'm like, what, have I fallen off the Christmas card list? What's happening here? But I do have one book I'd like to talk about, because I've had it on my shelf for a little while and I haven't sort of had the opportunity. It's a YA novel called The Other Side of Perfect by Mariko Turk. And it sounds absolutely wonderful. It's from Allen and Unwin. And it's about a girl called Alina who, wants to be a dancer, and she wants to be a ballet dancer specifically, which is the, you know, quite a specific thing to want to be. But she's had a fall and shattered her leg. And so there goes her dream of being a ballet dancer. And so she ends up kind of having to go to a normal high school. So she's been at a specific dance school and she ends up at a normal high school where she reluctantly joins the musical. As you can imagine, the high school musical, it's a world, as we know. Book boys in the, well, he's
We've
not doing a,
about this.
We have. He's not doing a musical this year, but the school play is its own special world. And so Alina joins the musical, and of course the high school musical is nothing like anything she's ever done at her kind of highbrow professional ballet dance school. And of course then there's like a bit of a romance, and it just looks like a lovely YA read, like a bit of a romance, a bit of a high school musical. I mean, you can't go wrong, can you?
No, absolutely not.
I think it sounds terrific.
Yeah, that sounds really fun. I really liked it. Yeah, I really like the idea of that one.
Yeah, it does. And it's got a Wei Chim, who we like a great deal, has done the blurb. A captivating story of love, loss, identity, and rediscovering your truth, perfectly on point. So I think if Wei loves it, we're going to love it.
There's a book that I had in my St. Aidan's library. I can picture it on the shelf, but I can't bring the title to mind. And it was a similar feel. It had, I think it was a UQP publication.
Emma Gray? Was it Emma Gray's one?
No, but it was about a girl who was a ballet dancer as well. And same thing, she was at a selective school and then she had to go back to like a normal school. But it was a similar idea. And I'm not somebody, I love watching ballet. I adore watching the ballet, but I can't. Clearly, I am such a klutz. But I love reading about it for some reason. I love people that are just amazing at certain things to the point that they're at selective schools. I find those novels really interesting. I'll have to look that one up.
Yeah, well, this one looks like it goes a little bit deeper into, like, touches on racism, it touches on, you know, shattered dreams and all of those sorts of things. But I think it also just sounds like it's got a really lovely voice. It's all in first person, and I just think it sounds like a lovely read. But just on Emma Gray, she has written a couple of kind of YA novels in that her first one I loved. It was called Unrequited.
No.
And it was about a girl who, you know, like who hates the boy band,
yeah,
Unrequited.
Actually, can I just say, my 16-year-old niece, the non-reader, that was one of the breakthrough books for her. I gave that to her 2 years ago and she adored it.
Yeah, I'm not surprised because it's such a fun read and it just it captures that joy of and heartache and heartbreak and horror of being a teenager so well. I think it's great and I think I can see why reluctant readers would love it because you kind of like just kind of bops along at a great pace and it's got the boy band and it's got, you know, it's terrific.
It's brilliant. And just as a segue, because we never do a segue, do we?
Oh, no.
You introduced me to Emma Gray when my husband died, and Emma Gray is also a widow. And Emma Gray and I are now like best widow friends, widow friends. But we've actually caught up a couple of times as well. And
yeah,
she's
lovely.
A delightful human.
Yeah, she is. She really is. Good segue. All right, speaking of segues, let's segue back to the book mail.
Yes, so I have got Introducing Delilah LaRue by Nettie Hilton and A. Yee as my first bit of book mail this week. Unlike you, I have lots of book mail.
Yeah. I'm not jealous at all.
No, so this is a book for sort of 5 to 8-year-old readers. It would be a really good one for little people just starting out on their independent reading journey. It's about a little girl called Delilah LaRue, and she lives in the smallest house with the neatest fence and the rosiest garden in the street with her trusty sidekick, Nanny Annie, who is probably very old, but it doesn't matter. Now, what I like about this is Delilah LaRue's parents are very important people, and they don't feature in the stories. They're often very busy or away, so Nanny Annie, her nanny, looks after her. It's a trilogy of stories, and each of them features Delilah and Nanny Annie sharing adventures. And the adventures sort of begin quite close to home in the garden, but they move slowly out into the wider community. So there's this nice sense of growth. It's really lovely. The relationship between Delilah and Nanny Annie is also really beautiful. It's a sort of friendship that I think a lot of young people experience with an older person, like a grandmother or a grandfather or a nanny, as in the case is here. And what I really enjoy Nettie Hilton's writing. She is the author of Princess Peony and The Long Red Scarf, which has been one of my favourite books since 1987, when I was 11 years old, and Tough Lester as well, which was published in 1998. And I still pull out Tough Lester every year to read to, often to my preppies. And when I changed schools recently, it was one of the books that I checked the school library had. So, you know, they did. So I was happy about that. So Nettie Hilton has been writing and publishing books for quite some time. And I feel like she does timelessness really well. So particularly this little new chapter book series she's doing, I'm hoping it's going to be a series. It's got this really old worldly feel to it, and yet it's also quite contemporary. I just think, Nettie, you were talking about, you were talking about a voice earlier on, a nice voice. I think Nettie Hilton really captures that as well. There's a real warmth in her writing, and it's often about gorgeous relationships with friends and with older people. So I love Nettie Hilton, really enjoy her work. Yeah, good one. And then next up I've got The Silly Seabed Song by Aura Parker. Now, Chickpea this is one's a picture book. Chickpea is 9. She jumped on this one because Aura Parker happens to be one of her favorite picture book author illustrators ever since she wrote Twig, which is a story about a stick insect and was the reason that Chickpea then ended up with stick insects as pets.
That's right.
Yeah, but she's also the author illustrator of Goodnight Glowworms and Meerkat Splash, and her latest one is The Silly Seabed Song. I handed this one to our music specialist at work this week, and she was just like, oh, great, that's so perfect for next term's music lessons. It was inspired by the Great Barrier Reef. It's set in that sort of reef setting. It's watercolour and coloured pencil, which is what Aura does so beautifully. Mm. And actually, there's a time lapse on, I'll link it in the show notes. She did a drawing for World Ocean Day, and there's a time lapse on YouTube of her drawing some of the characters from this book, and it's really a great thing to watch. I was saying, I'm not sure if I did say it on this podcast or on another one. When I read a book to a group of children, I often will Google it first to see if there's any interviews with the author or any things like them illustrating on YouTube, because it's a nice way to connect what you're reading with the actual person that wrote or illustrated the book. So I like looking up what is available online. Now, this one is about rock oysters singing the silly seabed song, which, you know, I would sing to you, but I cannot sing. There is a lovely...
Oh, come on now.
Yeah, no, probably not. I will link once again to the show notes to a little clip of Aura doing a read aloud and the sing-along jingle. I did sing it in front of my preps and nobody fell over in horror.
They didn't run out of the room screaming or anything?
They didn't, but I'm definitely not doing it this morning. But it's really beautiful. It's about a silly seabed song sending sea creatures to sleep. And there's really crazy words in it. It's lots of fun. It's a really good one. And Aura's done this in a few of her books. The end papers are beautiful. She does great end papers. Well done, Aura. It's also got, like, you can count the different sea creatures. And I love that sort of thing. She did that in Twig as well. Penguin's done a really lovely activity pack for it. So I'll link that as well. It's just one of those picture books that I'm like, this is the perfect early childhood book. It's a great rhyming text that works brilliantly. It's got a lovely rhythm to it. It reads aloud beautifully. Or if you are the music teacher, you may sing this book, which, you know.
Are you assuming that music teachers can sing? Is that a thing? Maybe if there's music teachers out there, please let us know. Can you all sing?
Actually, that's really interesting because I suppose they don't necessarily, I assume they can sing.
They may be able to like play piano or guitar or something, but not necessarily sing.
Well, yeah, that's a fair point.
Just ask them, just check in. Let's do a survey. I love a good survey. And I also I just want to say I really loved Twig. I met Aura several years ago at a thing, something we were at, around about the time that Twig came out. And I remember looking at it and just thinking what a gorgeous looking thing it is, like just as an illustrated thing. Oh, just divine. And she's such a lovely woman.
She's a delightful woman. Yeah, she really, really is. Yeah. Mm. And then my final one is Twitch by M.G. Leonard, which I have a feeling Alison Rushby was recommending and talking about in
Kids
Next Read.
She was. Yeah. And I think we did a giveaway. I think we did a giveaway of this one. Yeah,
we did. Yeah. So my 9-year-old Chickpea is on her way to becoming a Twitcher. So a Twitcher is somebody who is a bird watcher. And I have a friend who won't call herself a Twitcher, but I'm just going to say, Lyndall, you are a Twitcher. She takes photographs of birds and has taken Chickpea out to go bird watching, and Chickpea is a massive fan of birds. So this one is just perfect for her. I'll read you the blurb. If you love birds, nature and adventure as much as Twitch and his friends, join the Twitchers Club. All you need is a notebook and pencil, plus a pair of binoculars and a camera if you have them, and then you'll be ready to spot birds and adventure wherever you go. And I love this Twitchers Club oath that you have to take. I do solemnly swear never to knowingly hurt a bird. I will respect my feathered friends and help them when they are in need. I will protect every bird, be it rare, endangered or common, and fight to conserve their habitats. Or may crows peck out my eyes when I'm dead. For I am a Twitcher now and forever. Isn't that great?
I love it. I really love the idea of this book. I love the cover. And I am a secret Twitcher. My whole family are secretly Twitchers. We have been, well, one of the beautiful things about the garden that I have been in charge of for the last 10 years that I am now leaving and I am desperately sad about. Like, I just, if it's possible to grieve a garden, I'm in the middle of that right now.
It because is I'm possible to grieve
devastated.
A garden.
But anyway, that's a whole other story. Like, I just want to point out that we have our own, and now I've had a complete mental blank. What are those birds that, do you know when you're talking and you've got your mind going in 26 different ways? You know the birds that build those at Bower? We have two Bower birds.
No way,
two.
Do not.
We have two.
I'm sorry, and they are, you have to unpack. You cannot
that's
leave.
That's what I said.
No.
We've got two.
No, you have to
so
tell
we've
the
got
builder it's off. The move's off.
We've got the satin Bower bird and we also have that beautiful dark blue glossy Bower bird. We've got one of each. And they build their bowers and every year they have them in the same essentially the same place, opposite sides of the garden. Make their bowers, steal my pegs. I can't buy blue pegs anymore because they steal all of my pegs and they turn the peg basket over to get them out. Like I've got pegs all over the garden. So I've got the two bower birds. We have we have the fairy wrens. We've got and they come back every year. The place has got so many little nests, little bird nests everywhere.
Oh, how beautiful.
So I'm devastated to be leaving. But what I wanted to say on top of – so Twitch by MG Leonard is for middle grade readers. There is a book called The Big Twitch by Sean Dooley, which the builder and I read years ago, I reckon 15 to 20 years ago. Mm. It is one of the best creative nonfiction books I've ever read.
Really?
It's about a guy
– Adult book.
Adult book. Sean Dooley. So Sean Dooley inherits his parents' house after they pass away. And he spends the money on a quest to see 100 birds or some – I can't exactly remember now. It's been a while – in a year. He's got a year. Mm. He's got a list and he goes on this quest all over Australia to see all of these different birds. And it sounds like – I know what you're thinking, like, Al, seriously, you've lost your mind.
No, I'm thinking that one sounds brilliant.
It is fantastic. He's got an amazing voice. Again, we come back to voice, always voice. I'll have to do a quick tips on voice at some point, I think. Mm. But he hasn't, it's structured like a quest. It's got the full hero's journey in it. It's fantastic. Really good.
Mm.
And yes,
I didn't actually know you were a secret closet Twitcher.
Well, they come to me. I don't even have to leave home. So I'm planning a new garden at my new house at the moment, and we're thinking about all the various things that we can put in it to attract the birds and feed the honey eaters and all of that kind of stuff, because it's such an important thing to me to go out the back and have them all, you know, doing their thing. So that's one of the joys, I guess, of a new place is that we get to
creating something new,
a new garden. We're taking bits of the old garden with us. So there's certain plants here that
I thought you were going to say we're taking the bower birds with us.
Oh God, no, I'm not taking the bower birds. Can you imagine packing them up in a box, bower bird written on the outside, garden. We're taking, like, I've got cuttings and I've taken bits that I've already repotted and I'm like, look at me, I'm crazy.
No, you're not. I've got a massive, massive crow's nest plant that's attached to a massive tree in my backyard that has gone with me where I've moved, and we are moving within the next year. And I've already said to the beekeeper, well, either the tree has to be cut down and I take, it's just a dodgy, awful palm tree. It either that comes with me or we have to get that off, because it was my granddad's and I feel very connected to
funny?
It.
You get so attached.
You get really attached. And I've got his agapanthus, which I will take some of, and I'm exactly the same. I take cuttings from wherever I've been. And my mother is a thief. She is what she calls a nipper and tucker. So she nips and tucks, particularly succulents, but all kinds of plants wherever she is going as well. So she's constantly, her garden is built off other people's cuttings.
Yeah, well, you have to do it. I have the Mick Tate Memorial Orchid, which was an orchid that grew like across the fence wild at my grandparents' house up in North Queensland. And my dad is also a nipper and tucker. So he snipped bits and brought them back and then repotted them for us. So I don't know if my siblings have got one, but I've got one because I said I want one of those. So,
yeah.
Anyway, possibly we should move on.
We often go down this gardening. Maybe we start a gardening podcast.
I think we do. We need Nippers and Tuckers Anonymous. That's what we need right now. All right. So let's talk about a bingo question this week. And this week we've decided it's actually NAIDOC week, 4th to the 11th of July 2021 is NAIDOC week. And this year the national NAIDOC theme is Heal Country. It's a celebration of 65,000 years of history, culture, and achievements, but it's also time to chart a just future. So this week we're going to talk about, you know, best texts by First Nations authors and illustrators. And I'm going to hand over to you, Megan, because I know that you have actually created an epic list of you know, text by First Nations authors and illustrators. And I'm very excited to see that at the top is one that I talked about on an episode 9, I think it was, Story Doctors by, and I'm going to get it wrong again, aren't I?
Bori,
Monty Pryor, and Rita Sinclair. But yeah, let's talk about some of the suggestions that you've got, because it is something that comes up regularly in the Your Kids Next Read community is, you know, people wanting, you know, own voices, stories.
Yeah. Well, it was actually Lottie, who is a member of Your Kids Next Read, who said to you and I, can you create a list of First Nations authors and illustrators based on age? And, you know, thanks, Lottie, because that has taken me like, look, I know, Lottie. Thank you, Lottie.
No, really, thanks, Lottie.
It has taken me quite some time because, you know, I wanted to get it right, and I have done a really epic list, which we won't put in the show notes because you'd just be scrolling forever, but I will do a blog post and link to this blog post. And it will actually, Justine, the beautiful Justine, my VA, will do a blog post. And I will link that. And it, I've done it in terms of primary school, middle to upper primary, and then secondary school. And what I've done is I've thought about all of the First Nations authors and illustrators that I have loved over very many years, and then also some really new ones as well. And I'll hopefully update this list regularly. And, of course, I would love feedback on it. So leave a comment on my blog post or anywhere on my social media. So a couple of them that I just wanted to highlight was, absolutely, I agree, Story Doctors has to be top of the list because it was, I think, published for NAIDOC Week and it was written in lockdown last year. And it's a beautiful one by Bori. Goal by Lydia Williams and Lucinda Gifford is a new picture book, which I have been really, really loving. I spoke about Billy and the Blue Bike by Amberlyn Quaymelina in an early, one of the first episodes of Your Kids Next Read, the podcast. And I just want to say there that Amberlyn Quaymelina and Ezekiel Quaymelina are two of my all-time favourite First Nation author and illustrators. Also I love saying Quaymelina. But I just, because it just rolls off the tongue so beautifully, but I just feel like they nail it. We Are the Dreamers, I think it's called We Are the Dreamers, is one by Ezekiel Quaymelina. It's a picture book, which is now sadly no longer in print, that I just love. I just feel like they, oh my gosh, they do some beautiful books, and they are actually the children of Sally Morgan. And, I, you know, many of you will know Sally Morgan from having studied my place in high school like I did. But, you know, they just are such an incredible family. I also love Baby Business by Jasmine Seymour, and I'm using that one next term, actually, with my year threes who are looking at significant events around the world. And Baby Business is about smoking ceremonies for newborn babies. And I just adore that one. Our Home, Our Heartbeat by Briggs, because I love Briggs music, really like that one. Love a bit of hip hop. I've also really loved Daybreak by Amy McQuire, which was a new one which came out this year. That one's been really popular all over. I've seen that one all over social media and I've used it extensively at school. And of course we couldn't not mention Bruce Pascoe, who of course did Young Dark Emu and Dark Emu, but you know, which I love, but I have to say probably my favourite of his books are Mrs. Whitlam and Seahorse, which are these junior fiction but could go to middle upper primary, or in fact probably are better suited to middle upper primary, junior, very short chapter books with just beautiful stories. And there's a new one coming out called Albert Namajira by Vincent Namajira, which I'm really looking forward to.
Oh, when's that coming?
That one is a Magabala Books one, and it is out in the next couple of months.
Have you been watching, I have to ask this, have you been watching the Rachel Griffiths series on the ABC about the Archibald Prize?
I have not.
So good. So good. So Vincent Namagiras, like, he was in the first episode and the second episode of that. She actually went to visit him there. But it's sort of like tracing the history of the Archibald Prize. And Albert Namagira, there was a portrait of him by William Dargie in 1959, which won the Archibald Prize at that time. And I think it was 1959. Don't quote me on the dates, right? Oh. But it's an extraordinary
image. I'll have to go and watch that.
Yeah, no, do watch it. Honestly, yeah. Recommendation, so good. But there's this incredible, when you look at the image, when you look at the portrait, there's just this sadness in his face that is just so well caught by the artist. And then Vincent actually won the Archibald Prize, I think it was last year, for his portrait of Adam Goods. And he was the first Indigenous author to win the Archibald in 100 years. And this, it was kind of like this, the way they've brought that together as part of this, you know, timeline that they've done is very, very clever. And I just, even just the kind of development of the art of portraiture was extraordinary to look at. So I've totally segued there, but I'm going to recommend that you go and have a look at that.
I'm going to look at that. And maybe my mother has already watched it, but she grew up in the Northern Territory and her family knew members of the Namagira family and she's an avid fan of all things Namagira. So and she was an art teacher, so I shall have to recommend that one to her as well. Mm. In my middle to upper primary list, I just want to highlight Commonwealth by Greg Drace. He's just an amazing First Nations author, illustrator. We've had him at Story Arts Festival before. Lovely guy, really fantastic for author visits. And then in my secondary list, I talked about Tell Me Why, the Younger Readers Edition by Archie Roach in episode 8. Great one. What have you got?
Well, I'd like to highlight The Boy from the Mish by Gary Lonsborough because he's a relatively local author, and he's also going to be featuring at the launch of the Shoalhaven Readers and Writers Festival on July the 30th. So if you are somewhere in the area, please come along and join us. I'll be doing an in conversation with Gary and we'll be talking, you know, I don't know what we'll talk about yet. I haven't worked that out, but it's going
to
be great.
You'll get to
whatever
that.
Happens. It's going to be amazing. But I interviewed him for the So You Want to Be a Writer podcast, and we talked about his journey, you know, from because he's from Bega, I think. And we talked about his journey sort of like from there to he's only about 25. He's got his debut novel out. He's working on another one, and he's had an extraordinary journey. So I'm really looking forward to that conversation, and I really enjoyed the book. My Place by Sally Morgan, obviously, is one of those ones that if you haven't read it, you need to read it. Another one I'd like to highlight is a book called Brontide by Sue McPherson. And I met Sue at the Brisbane Writers Festival a couple of years ago, and I bought her book for Book Boy, and I took it home and he read it. And at the time he was keeping his blog. He was probably about 15, I think. And I said to him, I think you'll really like find this book really interesting. And he did. And I said to him, are you going to review it for the blog? And he said, no, because I don't know if it's fiction or nonfiction. And I was like, what? And he goes, no, you read it. I don't know if it's fiction or nonfiction. And I read it. And I said to him, okay, I will interview Sue for the So You Want to Be a Writer podcast so we can find out exactly what the story behind the book is and how much of it is fact and how much of it is fiction. It's about a group of boys. It's told in a couple of different voices. And I can understand his confusion because it does read like it happened. It reads like nonfiction. It's really clever book, really well done.
She's a lovely woman.
And fantastic. I think it would be a sensational one for reluctant readers because it's not a big book.
It's very short,
thick.
Isn't it?
It's very short, but it's complex, you know, like it's not a neat, it's not a difficult read, but it's a complex read. It's really good. And then Ghost Bird by Lisa Fuller, which I read, I think it was last year or the year before, and I recommend this one because it freaked me out.
I'm not reading that one because it freaked you out.
It was kind of, yeah, It freaked me out. Anyway, it was really well done. Very, very well done. I also bought My Australian Story, Who Am I? By Anita Heiss for my youngest son, Book Boy Jr. Mm. It's about the stolen generation and it's partly set in my local area. So I wanted him to read that and get an understanding of some of the history of this area. And the other book I really loved was Freedom Machines by Curly Saunders, which was illustrated by Matt Odford and is just beautiful. It's a picture book.
Yeah, Curly Curly writes just the most beautiful books. Kindred is the one that I really love by her, and of course Bindi as well. And just on Anita Heiss, again, just recommendation for an author visit. If ever you're looking for an author visit, I don't even know if she's still doing them, but my gosh, if she is, she is amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
So we studied My Australian Story, Who Am I? At St. Aidan's. I had about 200 copies of that book in my library, but it's just such a great book and she's such a great author visit.
Mm, excellent. All right. Moving on, let's do our quick tips for this week. And I'm going to begin because I'm bossy like that. And this week I have once again stolen my quick tips because I can. And I'm going to be talking about how to create remarkable characters. And I got these tips from Tim Harris, who, of course, is the author of Mr. Bam Buckle's Remarkables and also the author of Toffle Towers. Mm. And Tim wrote a blog post for my blog, alisontate.com. You'll find it quite easily. But I will also put the link in the show notes, which you'll find at yourkidsnextread.com. And these are his top sort of tips for creating remarkable characters for your stories. And he's got a couple of different tips. I'll only share a couple here, but you'll find six of them at the blog post. So the first one is to keep it simple. So he says, you know, this might sound rather unremarkable, but if you don't overcomplicate things, like if you just give them a couple of distinct traits, then they'll make a real impression, as opposed to loading them up with 1,000 different things that make them remarkable. So his examples are Fred and George Weasley guarantee cheekiness and loyalty. The Big Friendly Giant, the BFG, is gentle and quirky in speech. Katniss Everdeen from The Hunger Games is brave and determined. So if you're going to create a character, they don't need to be smart, kind, brave, determined, cheeky, loyal, gentle and quirky in speech. They only need to be a couple of those things so that they make an impression. Otherwise, they're just a jumble of different things. He says, when you're writing a story, give your characters a physical presence. So maybe they always wear black. Maybe they always wear stripy socks. Maybe they twiddle their thumbs when they're nervous. Something memorable, but one thing. So not like 26 different things again. And then the last things he says, or the last thing I'm going to share today, he's got other things as well. Characters need to want something. If you're creating a remarkable character, that character has to want something. Even if it's just to make it through a day at school without being beaten up, or without being called on by the teacher or whatever, but they have to want something, because what they want is going to drive the story forward. The whole story is about them trying to get what they want. So you've got to think very carefully when you're setting up your character about what that character wants, and then you make it really hard for them to get there. So those are my three tips for creating remarkable characters. Actually, Tim Harris's tips, but let's not niggle about that. What about you? What have you got for us this week?
I'm going to give some tips on rhyming books and on poetry. Now, Lana Hallows, who writes for my website, Children's Books Daily, has done me a guest post on why she loves rhyming books. And I'm going to also steal a little bit from my own book, Raising Readers, which was written, Natalie Jane Pryor wrote a part about poetry. So I'm going to smash together a guest post and a little excerpt from my book. So Lana talks about in my blog post about how there's something very much hardwired into the human brain that, independent of culture or upbringing, responds to rhyme, rhythm, and words that can be memorized and chanted. And lots of us early childhood teachers and teacher librarians gush about the learning power of rhyme. So my first tip is, if you have got a small child in your life, find some really good rhyming texts. And I've provided a list for Lana's blog post of some of my favorite rhyming texts. But I would also say to you that not every rhyming text is created equal. You need to read them aloud. You need to work out which ones work for you and your child, and have a few of those in your child's room or at home that are ones which work really well, and you can read them over and over again. It's one of the very first pre-reading skills that you can teach a child, is that power of rhyme and rhythm in a story. Rhythm helps little people to develop auditory discrimination, listening skills, gain a really rich vocab, develop phonemic awareness, and early concentration skills. And also it helps them to fall in love with books and words, of course. But yeah, they're very, very important, those first rhyming books. And then Natalie Jane Pryor says in my book about poetry, I love this line: don't think of poetry as an optional extra. Think of it as a weapon in your children's arsenal for life. I think that's a great line. And she also goes on to say that even if it's not something that you're naturally drawn to yourself, teaching young children to love poetry is not as daunting as you might think. Start off by making sure every new baby has a good quality book of nursery rhymes and an anthology of poems aimed at early childhood, and read them as part of a nightly bedtime routine. And like I've just said about picture books, you'll soon find out which ones are favourites. Encourage children to learn poems by heart and recite them with you. And as they move further into the pre-reading stage, point out rhyming words on the page so that they can associate the sounds with the letters. So she goes on to talk about some of her favourite poetry books, but I just think that, you know, poetry and rhythm and rhyme are just so important for young people. And they also then help to develop older readers who have a sense of the beauty of poetry, and not be scared of poetry, because I guess that's my final top tip. Don't be scared of poetry. You know, we get so caught up in worrying about not understanding poetry. If you are not someone who loves poetry yourself, start with a verse novel. Verse novels are an amazing introduction to free verse poetry. So yeah, rhyme, poetry, power of it, fantastic.
Sensational. I love your quick tips. Brilliant. All right. Well, that's us finished for the week. What are we up to? What will you be doing?
Well, I'm hoping to go to Tim Minchin at QPAC. Depending on all things COVID, but I'm very much hoping to see Tim Minchin. This will be, I've seen him many a time, and I found out a few years ago that my neighbours over the back, hello Sam and Stu, actually know Tim Minchin. Ooh. And we often end up with not only free tickets, but also a drink with Tim at the end of the show, which, you know.
Like, a little bit jealous.
I know, right? But let's just cross fingers, toes, everything.
Fingers crossed. Because I do love Tim Minchin. And Book Boy also loves Tim Minchin. We actually had a date to see him at the State Theatre a couple of years ago. Just the two of us went up for it. And it was just amazing. Because it was the first time he'd seen him live. I'd seen him before, obviously. And it was just the joy of watching someone see, particularly as he's a performer.
Yes.
Watching him watch Tim Minchin was a great joy for me. Like, it was, you know, just taking on board all of the things that he is, which was amazing. But Book Boy will be having his own gig, hopefully. So that's what I'll be doing, and moving house, and probably eating a lot of pizza and hoping that my internet gets connected properly.
That's so stressful.
I know. I just can't even. Anyway, hopefully, fingers crossed. Hopefully, catch you on the flip side. Thank you for joining us today. You will find all of our show notes and more information about us at yourkidsnextread.com. You will find the books that we have mentioned on our Booktopia page, if you're in Australia, at booktopia.com.au, and we'll have all of them there, even the enormous list that Megan has put together for this week's bingo question. And hopefully you will find some new and amazing First Nations author or illustrator to discover there. We will catch you next week.
See you later.